Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome back to The Exchange. Today, we have a very special episode for you, dear listeners, as the show is spreading its wings and leaving the nest, and we'll be joined by none other than the Lesser Bonapartes, as we talk with our first non-Agora member podcasters. The Lesser Bonapartes are the dynamic duo of Daniel Doughty and Glenn Gibbs, who have, over the last 2 years, taken the history podcast genre by storm and captivated the hearts and minds of much of the fandom. Glenn and Daniel consistently provide thoughtful and sincere commentary and analysis on a broad range of topics, but have the unique ability to take the blood-soaked and fatalistic landscape of history and engage with it in an irreverent and ebullient manner that, for all of its lightheartedness, is never frivolous and in no way cheapens the substance of their discussions nor diminishes their effectiveness as storytellers. Now, I have never pretended to be a journalist or made any pretenses as to objectivity, but as an interviewer, I should probably state my biases up front. I am a fan of the Lesser Bonapartes, and I was absolutely thrilled that they accepted the invitation to be on The Exchange. Glenn and Daniel are absolute delights, and they are every bit as genuine and unaffected in conversation as they are on their podcast. I do have one other admission before we get started. I was a bit starstruck, particularly in the beginning of the interview, and boy did I blow right past Glenn trying to say hi, and I wanted to say sorry about that, Glenn. But I rallied, and I think we have a very engaging, very revelatory interview to share despite my best effort to muck it up. But that's enough gushing for me, so ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you the Lesser Bonapartes. Daniel Doughty, Glenn Gibbs, welcome to The Exchange.
Hey, great to be here, Tom. Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's a real honor. I'm really, really glad you're here. I wanted to jump right in. I appreciate your guys' time. I know you're intrepid podcasters yourself. So I wanted to start at the beginning. How did this happen, and who can we blame the Lesser Bonapartes on?
I think Glenn has to take the fall for this one.
I was bored, I guess. I figured I would just I don't really like podcasts that much. I kind of wanted to do one that I would like listening to, and there's like every Tom, am I allowed to swear? I just had to stop myself.
Yes, yeah, whatever you guys want to do.
Okay, yeah, every fucking podcast is like about bad movies. It's like, oh, have you seen A Talking Cat? Oh, hi, Mark, The Room. And I was like, well, that's boring. And then, like, a lot of history podcasts are real dry, too. I like history. I like movies. And then I went to Daniel, and I just kind of said to him one day, what if two guys talked about history the way people talk about bad movies? Like, you just got out of a movie. You both hated it. You're in a bar. And now, but instead of But instead of talking about, like, you know, whatever, Terminator 3, you're talking about, you know, Napoleon. And that was kind of, that was basically it.
Yeah.
So did you guys know each other then beforehand? How'd you guys meet?
Well, that's actually, we did meet on the forum for a bad movie podcast, actually. That's,
well, that's some deep irony there.
We were habitués of a particular sort of forum for this bad movie podcast, but it was a pretty freewheeling community, and topics came up all over the place rather than just about that particular podcast or, you know, movies or whatever. And me and Glenn both sort of noticed each other making a lot of history references, and so we sort of struck up a bit of a rapport pretty quick, as I recall. And we were both kind of like, you know, we'd see each other on the forums and be like, hey, that guy. So that was really, yeah, we have only ever known each other through the medium of the World Wide Web in its various incarnations. But yeah, which surprises a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm always, I want to say, I'm always fairly embarrassed when, because that was probably the most, that's probably the most frequently asked question we get is like, how do you and Daniel know each other? Where did you meet? You sound like you've been friends since childhood. And it's always just like, nope. real boring. You know, it's always just like, there's no real, like, you know, first we had our, you know, days in the Cavern Club in Hamburg, and we sweated our way up through the, you know, it's not like that. It's just kind of like we just kind of went for it one day. It's just, yeah.
You essentially picked each other up in a chat room.
Yes. Essentially, yeah.
Totally, very 21st century of you.
It was.
Or I guess more like very late 20th century.
That's true. Oh,
1999 move.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still using my discs as coasters over here, so.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Glenn. Sorry.
Well, I was saying it's just like, you know, it's just kind of like, I don't know how this podcast would have happened without it, though. I mean, it's not like, you know, me and Daniel would have one day been in the same glory hole, and then we'd I'd like, you know, and then I would just be like, hey, you know, how about that Bronze Age collapse, you know, through the hole? I don't know. It's just kind of like, it's a very 21st century how we met. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, you guys were obviously, your fan base is all very happy that it came together. And, you know, you guys are unique voices when it comes to the history podcast genre. I can only really think of maybe Cam and Riley's podcasts as a remote predecessor, but even that's an imperfect example because you do have just, you know, significant stylistic differences. But you guys do really bring a color and I guess an edginess to being history nerds, and it shows that a history podcast doesn't have to be stodgy and diffident. You know, you can enjoy grappling, you know, with the questions and issues that history presents us with. And I think you guys have really been a tonic to a genre that, as you said, Glenn, you can be a little dry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I always tell people, like, the energy we were out to capture is that if you were ever at, like, a big stupid keg party, and you sort of strike up a conversation with some random dude, and it turns out, like, I don't know, that they read the same book that, you know, you just read, and you were excited to talk about it, and the person, like, is like, wow, I actually know what you're talking about too. That is cool. Holy shit, dude. And so you're just kind of like hanging out at, you know, by the keg and, pardon the expression, broing out for a while. But that's kind of the, I think that's the that's the energy we always thought we could bring to the table, I guess. Like, that's how we wanted to do it, because that's how we would feel about it. You know, it's for, I think for both Glenn and I, like, history is a topic that is, yeah, I mean, there's times for the dry recitation effect, but then sometimes you just want to, like, have a sort of, I don't know, enthusiastic conversation where you know, don't feel bad about throwing out a few swear words because you're fucking excited about, you know, the gin craze or whatever, what have you.
Right on. And you know, when I listen to your podcast, I do have that palpable feeling That we're hearing the real Daniel and the real Glenn. You know, you can hear the beer popping in the background, and you know, wives have been known to show up and share pillow talk about the historical neglect of the Hussites. Yes. You know, and I think that sense of authenticity really energizes the Lesser Bonapartes. It's good to know that, you know, here we are turning the chairs around and, you know, turning our hats backwards, as you guys like to say, and that keeping it real really is important to the vitality of the show. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think for me, I don't really, I guess I've always just kind of grown up with a healthy disdain for authority. I was always that smart alecky kid, and I think to a large extent I still am, because for me, history is like, what fascinates me about history. A lot of people want to hear those big stories, or they want to hear Dan Carlin go, you know, the Khwarizmian scouts came upon a pile of bones. And yeah, that happens, but I mean, I just want to, like, I love finding out how not different history is. Like, the example I always use is, wouldn't it be the stupidest shit you ever saw in your life if, like, you were walking in a park tomorrow and you saw a statue of Donald Trump on a horse with a sword in his hand? You know, and you know, and wouldn't you laugh and say that is ridiculous? Who put that stupid shit there? But you get a guy that lived 2,000 years ago, and it's the Donald Trumps of their day were making those statues, and somehow these are the big men of history that we should all talk in these hushed, reverent tones. These were just those guys. Look at like Crassus. That was Donald Trump of his day.
Wow! Yeah,
going into you know,
very close cognate. Yeah,
yeah. Going into the, and he got killed. But now we want to tell the story about Marcus Licinius Crassus and the triumvirate. It was just the same shit. It was just they were just doing it what they had at their time. If Donald Trump lived 2,000 years ago, he would be putting together an army right now. He wouldn't, you know. But today. Today you just have to build casinos, and you know it's how many Twitter followers you have, and you get in a Pizza Hut commercial. But it's always the same. So when people like will be like, oh yeah, you make that joke about whatever about the skateboard, or you say like Napoleon's like totally not a bro. I mean, human beings have always been human beings. I don't understand why being in the past and having a stupid hat on your head makes it somehow more epic or something. You know, I don't.
Right. And, you know, I was always grabbed, and I assume many of your listeners were grabbed by the very low threshold for bullshit that you tolerate from, you know, primary sources or the subsequent historiographical record. Now, is that demystification a goal of the... Is that a goal of your show, or is that just a natural outcome of your process?
I think that's kind of fair to say that I think when we first started out, I think that was a little more explicit. Like our sort of pilot episode about Alcibiades was that we did set out to deflate reputations because that guy's just a dick. but I think really beyond that, I think it is just more of an outcome of our... I think both Glenn and I, and you know, Glenn can jump in if he feels I am misrepresenting him, of course. But I think we are both, when it comes to researching history, we are very keen to try to get away from our own preconceived notions, to try to approach everything we're learning about in as fresh a way possible, to basically to leave ourselves open to whatever impression we can get from the text and the documents and whatever. And it just so happens that we are just we are a couple of dudes who do have a low bullshit threshold. So I think in a way it's sort of a we started out the project almost with a kind of like we're going to take down the great man of history theory more or less explicitly, but we got away from that pretty quick because we realized like even that kind of approach is really limiting to what we really want to do, which is to critically appraise not just the historiography that's been handed down to us, but actually like the characters themselves as close as we can get to them. So I think it really just does come down to, I guess it is an aspect of process more than anything else. And honestly just sort of where Glenn and I are coming from. Like we've had it up to here with the stories of, you know, noble so-and-so did this and that and he's a great man and here's his statue. Like we're much more interested in, you know, okay, well, you know, how did the footmen who had to follow this guy's orders think of him? Like, what was it like to live in the state that so-and-so built? Like, what are the consequences of all this greatness that people are throwing around? Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, I think that's where it comes from more than anything.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make sense of it all. I mean, like, one thing I don't want, I really wouldn't want to be lumped in, because there's this whole kind of subgenre of history where that is their mission statement of, like, you know, what you all thought about history was wrong, and we debunk all the myths, and that's not really, that's very one-dimensional, because, yeah, I mean, there are, you know, history is always what somebody wants you to believe happened, but, you know, there are some larger-than-life characters, and there are some larger-than-life things that happen, so I think if the show has evolved in a way, we've evolved away from being, like, here we are to teach you this thing, and everything you always thought about history was wrong, too. Now you're kind of like, I think now you're watching us, you're kind of like, this is as pretentious as all hell, and I apologize, but what I tell people now when I try to explain the show to them is that the show has evolved in a way that it's now a documentary about the creation of itself, where you're watching two guys try to wrap their heads around something, and you're kind of witnessing us learn as we go and try to figure it out. And sometimes we might get it wrong. Sometimes we might get it right. But what I always like to tell people, too, is how do you know they got it right? I mean, think about it. Think about all that, like, Saving Private Ryan, Greatest Generation horseshit that was coming out in the late 90s while they were still living eyewitness people from World War II. And then, you know, they don't talk about the Tokyo fire bombings or anything like that and Saving Private Ryan. It's all just these, you know, these large men bestriding this war. And thank God for these old men, you know. And then you read a little bit more and you go like, oh, the percentage of draft dodging was higher in World War II than it was in Vietnam. And then you go, well, wait a minute. But then you go, well, yeah, but then, you know, that happened, and then, but then you read stories about, you know, Stalingrad and all that, and you're like, wow, this is, you start to get this big gray mass that forms, you know, where you're just like, wait a minute, these guys did some extraordinary things, and they did some horribly shitty things, and everybody on all sides was doing the same thing. So there are really no good guys and bad guys. So all I can try to do is try to make sense of it. You can't really frame it any other way. So we don't really come to any conclusions anymore. We don't say, like, everything you know about the Bronze Age is false. We just kind of go, well, that's my best guess, you know. And so that's all anybody can do. Yeah,
and that's, of course, where one of our many show mantras, shit has always been fucked and there was no golden age. It's, I think, one of the biggest takeaways we've had from the whole project. And I mean, just sort of as a sort of slight aside, sort of talking about the way the show has developed, I have actually found myself very much softening on my anti-great man of history jag that I was on for a long time, precisely because, I guess, sort of speaking to our most recent series, you know, Abd al-Rahman the First, you know, in the 8th century, this fleeing the Abbasid Caliphate and setting up a kind of a state of his own off in the far west, like, that was totally this one dude's, you know, initiative that made that happen, and which led to, like, you know, 2.5 centuries of this amazingly vibrant culture there in Islamic Spain. And you read the story, and it really does feel like, unless there was that one dude there pulling the strings, it probably wouldn't have happened, and it would have been very different. So I've ended up softening on that a bit as the show has gone on. But I think, yeah, I think Glenn is right to sort of hit upon it's that old trap of the more you learn about something, the less you feel like you really know. And
right.
So we're always happy, and I think we're always happy to be honest about that. Like whenever, like in the shows, we hit an impasse or we hit a wall, and we'll tell people like, "Yep, and that's where we ran out, and we don't know."
Well, so obviously the show has evolved in some ways, as you just touched on, but there have been some constants. Now, one of those would be humor, for instance. You're not Morning Zoo Radio yucksters or anything, but you guys are legitimately funny. You know, sometimes, you know, it was like, wow, what if Car Talk was funny and didn't suck? You know, that might be, that might be the lesser Bonaparte. Yeah.
I'll take it. Thank you.
but humor, I think, is a lot like Greek fire or some similarly dangerous, you know, material to work with. It can be really effective if you use it right, but if you don't, you set your own boat on fire. Now, are you guys consciously, you know, doing bits, running material, or do you run things by one another before you try it out, or is it all largely improvisational?
That's a really damn good question. Yeah. I think for...
I can't believe I just did that.
I think it's just the way we know how to talk. In a way, like, I think for both me and Glenn, like, our personalities are such that if we're going to talk in depth about anything, we're going to have to throw in, like... like when we think something's funny, or when it reminds us of something else, or when we think like this will be a funny thing to say, just because that's how we talk, and that's always the energy we wanted to bring to the show, was like, this is a conversation between two people interested in this thing. We're going to talk about this thing. I don't know that we've ever, like, sort of conscientiously, like, run a bit past each other. We're usually, like, when it comes to the jokes, like, well, I guess to tell a story, we have a premium subscriber feed that we call the Carlins, because they run longer. But we did one in December about the Maccabean Revolt, the Jewish religio ethnic revolt against the Seleucid Greek Empire, and due to various avoidable and unavoidable mistakes and whatnot, we ended up recording it 2.5 times over, basically. Oh, God. And but we had a kind of, and it was pretty exhausting. We did two of those on the same day, and that was pretty exhausting. But the thing is, like, I was kind of amazed at going through it and going through the process. Like, we really do have a kind of, the jokes are generally, I think, as far as I know, they're almost always going to be extemporized. So we had different bits that we were throwing out for each time we recorded that episode. And I don't know, Glenn, if you've just blocked that out of your memory, or if you recall it that way.
Yeah, that's kind of how it goes. I never say to Daniel, you know, then I'm going to say this, and then we pause for applause.
We never set it up for each other ahead of time, I guess.
Yeah. No, I only research half the topics. Because I think one of the things that when you talk about our rapport is that we divide what we're going to talk about, and then we largely don't research the other half. So when you... because the idea is we kind of want to surprise each other as we go with things we learn, like, hey, I learned this. And a lot of it is just me trying to understand something, and the only way I can understand things is through the lens that I use. So, like, I think, oh, well, this is like that, that's kind of like this. And a lot of those comparisons in my mind are where that humor comes from. Like, to use a recent example, I was talking about how... a way of, like, showing your status in Granada amongst the nobility was to make a big show of how well you treated your harem. So this is quite different from what we tend to think about when we think of slavery, where you kind of rule through fear. This was like you had made a big show about, and your harem was treated very well. These are still your sex slaves, and I found one painting of a nobleman giving one of his harem girls the gift of a parrot. So my immediate thought was, oh, that's kind of like Dead or Alive Extreme Beach Volleyball, where you had to get the girls on your team by giving them gifts like sunglasses and stuff. And so I say that to Daniel, that was kind of like that video game. So I think that's where the humor comes from, is that I'm trying to understand this Rolodex of, you know, trying to make analogies goes through my head. And sometimes they're funny, and sometimes they're not. I don't know, because I hardly remember what I say, because we don't really plan it out ahead of time.
Sure.
And there are certain episodes where I've had a little too much of Grandpa's cough medicine, so I don't really remember what I said. And then, you know, people will come back to me and say, like, oh, that was my favorite quote, and I'll be like, who said that? And then I really don't remember, because... because I don't, you know, it's just like, it's just all off the top of our head, you know, the jokes anyway.
The jokes. I mean, for the actual, like, sort of historical content, both Glenn and I will use notes for that, but the joking and the sort of, the interchange between us is extemporized, you know?
Well, that was very in-depth. It was so in-depth that you actually answered part of my next question already.
Nailed it, yes.
About the division of labor within your podcast. But it's just to like fully take the curtain down and get a full look behind stage here. How do you guys come up with your topics? Have you ever started and just had to say, holy shit, we can't do this, and just full out abort? Anything like that ever happen? Like, what's your process?
This is another one of those, like, how did we meet questions where the answer's fairly boring, where we don't really plan it out that far ahead of time. We just kind of go by feel. We'll just kind of pitch at each other and go, like, we have had listener requests in the past, and we have honored listener requests. But even when they are listener requests, we'll kind of be like, so how does this sound? Or, you know, hey, do you want to try that? And it's just kind of like, okay, and then we do it. Did we ever ditch out on one, Daniel? I don't remember if we ever have.
I don't think that we have. Like, if we, I think the pretty early on, actually, the one time where we probably should have ditched ended up being one of the great evolutionary leaps of the show, because very early on we hadn't even yet done a multi-part series. We had just been doing one to 1.5 hour single topic shows, and then we attempted to do the story of Alexander's successors, and I haven't listened in a very long time, so I don't know, but we're, you know, peek behind the curtain here. We actually discovered about an hour and 20 minutes into that recording that we were going to have to make it a multi-part series. So we had to say to each other, like, hey, let's punch out right now and, like, come back to this, like, you know. And that's literally how our first multi-part series was born. We sort of realized a dawning realization came that there's no way we can actually talk about all of this in any kind of effective span here.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
I think that was actually the first series where I could hear you guys sweating, now that you mention it.
Yes, exactly. No, yeah, that, the flop sweat
We honestly had no idea where that one was going, and because we had never done that before. We honestly went into that first one thinking we were going to wrap up the whole story in one episode, and then it was around an hour and 20 in, where Daniel kind of leaned in and said, I don't think we can do this in one part, and I was like, yeah. And then it was like, okay, let's make it a two-parter. And then in part two, it's like, I don't think we can wrap this up in time. How about three? So, like, and then when that really happened, the Great Leap Forward, was when we did that goddamn Napoleon series. Mm-hmm. And we were just that ended up being seven parts, because that happened every episode where we're like, I think we need one more to cover this. And that's happening a lot now too. We have our History of the Franks one, which went six parts, and we have our new one on Muslim Spain, which is going to go six parts or seven parts. And when there's mission creep, we allow it to happen, and we let the audience know that we're in over our heads and we're going to allow the mission to creep. So I think that's kind of, we actually let you see the flop sweat, and I think maybe that's why the podcast is so relatable. We allow the seams to show. It's kind of like, I always think of, this is another analogy I always make in front of Daniel, is that I think it's kind of like, I think my favorite idea of a show is the only way I can happen is like, if you think about the old Muppet Show, and the show was always about how Kermit the Frog was trying to desperately hold the show together while it was falling apart.
Right.
So I think that was the joke. So if the show falls apart and we just get too many plates spinning in the air, we let you see the flop sweat. We don't try to not let you see a sweat. So maybe that's part of the appeal, is that we'll be honest with people and go like, hey, this is out of our control. We're just going to let it roll and then see what happens.
Yeah. And I think that sort of ties in also to that. The way the show has evolved into a documentary about the creation of itself as we learn about this thing. But also to answer your question, like there's never been a topic where we like recorded an episode or we started researching and then said to the other one, like, nah, scratch it. Like we can't continue with this. Just, you know, throw it in the can. We've always seen it through once we started out. There's nothing on the cutting room floor, everybody. You have the entire output.
Well, now you guys have pretty much declared yourselves podcast brothers for life at this point. Now this is the warm and fuzzy question. Now, can each of you take a minute and just talk about what makes the other the perfect podcast partner?
Oh boy, man, right in the feels. I'll start. I'll start first. It really. For me, like I'm a kind of temperamentally pretty conservative fellow, not politically speaking, but just sort of in the manner I live my life all around. And Glenn has such a real verve, and he has a kind of, basically if we had grown up together, he would have been the kid who could talk me into trying to jump my skateboard over the ditch. He has that kind of aura, I guess, that kind of charisma with him. But I think I really would have dipped my toe in actually doing a podcast without Glenn there saying, hey man, let's do this. And I think beyond that, I think what makes him such a delight to work with is that he, at least specifically for like the topics that we talk about and the things that we do talk about, not just on the main feed of the show where it's all history topics, but also like one of the bonus feeds where we have LB Nights, which is more freewheeling, is that he's I don't know, there's just a certain kind of je ne sais quoi, and that's such a cheat thing to say when trying to answer this question.
There's a certain undefinable aspect of what makes him good.
Exactly, and I'm trying very hard to really pin it down. And I guess it would be like an enthusiasm. Like Glenn is never one to back down from biting off more than he can chew, and he will chew it anyway, because fuck you. and that's really energizing. That's something that I think is such a great energy to work with in somebody.
Glenn,
that's the best I could put it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what makes me and Daniel work so well, is that I delight, like, to use your Greek fire analogy, like, I think it's hilarious to point the Greek fire at the boat. And I think that's hilarious. And then I never think about that moment where you go, oh man, it's going to be so hilarious. I can't control myself. I mean, I could set the house on fire while making a peanut butter sandwich. I don't know how. It's taken me years and years to get to the point I'm at. I think that, you know, I'm 35 and going on 14, and I really try. I do, but I can't help myself. There would be no show, I think, without Daniel's kind of grounding nature, in that I'm the one that goes, hey, let's point the Greek fire at the boat. And Daniel goes, let's point it at the Slavs. And then I go, okay, let's point it at the Slavs, but let's fart and then point it at the Slavs. And then, right. You know, and then Daniel goes, we don't need to fart in order for it to be effective against the Slavs. And then I fart anyway. And then I use my fart to light the Greek fire.
You've just invented a whole new genre of fan fiction about us now. It's two Byzantine sailors.
Yes. But then I light my pants on fire. We take out the Slavs, and then Daniel helps me put my pants out. And then it all worked out in the end. is what it happens. So I think that's what helps. There's like the ground, and not to me saying that like I'm so much cooler, or way more fun of a party dude than Daniel. I think it's just
he really is though. That's the big
But I think that kind of there's that we achieve a balance. We put you know maybe I help Daniel come out of his shell a little more, and he helps me not point the Greek fire at the boat a little more. And it meets in the middle well, you know.
That's awesome, guys. Yeah. Now, I want to talk about a little bit of the content of your show. Now, your format pretty much allows you a lot of freedom in choosing your topics. And it seems like you've definitely focused on some lesser known cultures, events, things that aren't as well known to Europeans or American audiences. I'm thinking Tamerlane, Ethiopia, Aztecs specifically. Now, has shining a light on those very worthy but often overlooked subjects grown more important to you as podcasters over time?
I guess it has grown more important. That's an interesting way to put it. Because I think part of what we want to do is kind of avoid the burned over ground that so many other podcasts tackle. Like we haven't really touched on, say, Roman history all that much over the course of the show. Not because we're not interested in it. I mean, we both very much are. Like I both Glenn and I are heavy Rome Total War recovering addicts, and we've read up on it a lot, but I think both of us have thought to ourselves, like, there's a whole world of stories out there. There's a whole world of history. Every corner of the world has just as much history in it as the rest. Maybe not accessible to us, and maybe not, you know, maybe not as detailed, but, you know, there have been human beings living in those places for, you know, just as long as they've been living anywhere else, if, you know, going back to, say, 10,000 BC. I mean, you know, there you have it. So I think that's been a big factor. Is like we're interested in digging into stuff that we don't know much about, and in order to do that, we have to go a little further afield than we're accustomed to. Like we have to go outside of the big topics that people think of when you say history, you know, and which isn't to say that we don't, you know, fuck, we did, you know, 7 hours on Napoleon, but that was more, I think, just because, like, for both of us, like, that was a gap personally that we had that we didn't know all that much about. But even then, like, I don't know, Glenn, what do you think? Like, I think it's just more like we are looking for kind of fresher material, and that leads us.
Yeah, one thing that's important to me is that we always challenge ourselves and get out of our comfort zones in order to keep the show fresh. Because, I mean, like, how many podcasts are there on Rome or, like, World War One now? And, you know, those are interesting topics, but, I mean, and even, like, the podcasts that have been around for a while, like, I feel like they kind of fall into a pattern and then they just kind of crank them out. And I'm really not interested in doing that. You know, like, I really don't want to be, like, you know, so many podcasts become, like, you know, they fall into that AC/DC trap of, you know, let's just do another one. Let's do another one like the last one because we don't want to fuck with the formula and alienate the diehard fans. But you sort of just kind of, you kind of slide off, I think, over time with that. And then they either pod fade or they just start to rest on their laurels. Like, I mean, Dan Carlin's new thing on the Persian kings has been like 4 hours of Herodotus, and then you just go like, okay, then he makes his Star Trek reference, and then you go, okay. And then, you know, he puts out a new episode now, but then, you know, you kind of just go, all right. And I've seen that, you know, he's kind of sliding down those iTunes charts, because I think it's just kind of become like, okay, what's the new thing now? I've heard that before. So I don't ever want to be like, you know, here we are again, our next Rome podcast, our, you know, ancient Greek, our, because that's real easy to do. And then, but we would get bored. We would get comfortable. We would be doing mattress by mail ads, and it would just get boring, man. I just really think it would.
I think you hit on it. Like kind of as we were talking about, like, how we select topics, like, we basically kind of pitch stuff that, you know, the perfect topic, I think, for us is one that we have a passing familiarity with, but we couldn't give you any kind of major detail about. Like, that was, say, for instance, like the Ethiopia series. Like, I knew that Ethiopia had a deep, deep history. Like, I was aware that it was there. I couldn't have told you anything about it. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, I think that's another sort of avenue where we sort of end up falling into these topics that are generally sort of under, at least in the English speaking world, you know, under examined, I guess.
Right. So pushing that envelope, though, hasn't always really been that easy. You've actually gotten pushed back at times for not covering more, you know, Western history. You know, so much so that you guys in your recent Islamic Spain series had to issue a preemptive notice to those sort of objectors that you really don't care for what they think. And I've heard Sharon Eastaw, you know, she hosts the History of the Crusades. I've seen her say that she's had some brutally Islamophobic emails mm-hmm. from people just about her even-handed treatment of Islam. So did that preemptive warning help you guys? Like, what is going on there?
I think I was the one who delivered that preamble. Honestly, it was really like, my thought was that I'm issuing a listener discretion advised for racist assholes. Like, I just want you to know right off the bat, you're not going to like this. So don't bother listening and telling us that you don't like it, you know? That's really the long and short of it. I don't know, Glenn, like,
yeah, it's
how would you characterize it?
it's not like we don't care. I know it's always my mantra too, that, you know, no politics in the show. Let's keep politics out of it, because it's not that I don't care. You know, Daniel and I both have deeply held political beliefs, and we come at it mm-hmm. from different ways, but it's pointless. You see that kind of shit on your Facebook feed every day. Your aunt's posted memes about it. You know, like, because the more you go back, the more you realize it's not political at all, and people have always been people, and they paint these good guy versus bad guy stories, because there are assholes in history. I can't understand it. I can't understand how you could be a history buff and say, like, a racist asshole. Because, like, how could you say that, like, how could you be one of those guys that say, oh, Islam has contributed nothing to our culture? They contributed fucking lemons, dude.
It's awesome. And not just, like, and necessarily, like, Islamophobe, we don't want to limit it just to talking about that, but, like, you know, any kind of, yeah, I mean, you look into the history of any people or creed or ethos or nation or whatever, everyone's done some really fucked up shit. You know, like, it's and no one is safe from that, because we're all people, we're all human beings, and the idea of mining history to in order to score points, I think is what we object to. At least that's what I object to the most.
Yeah, I think people like have a preconceived notion, and they think that preconceived notion is legitimized if they could look into the past and then, like, cherry pick an example of, yeah, you know, oh, here's that, you know, I'm racist against group A. Look, hey, group A used to do this to group B, you see, so that's totally justified why I hate them. People like to, they think it leads some kind of, you know, some kind of legitimacy to their whatever stupid belief they have if they could find some kind of historical precedent for it. And I'm not interested in that. And people will do the same thing with our politics today. And people have been doing the same thing with politics since time immemorial. So it's just, it's not interesting to me. And it's
exactly
pointless.
Yeah, it's not interesting. I think that's the biggest aspect of it. Like that's a really limiting and stultifying and dull way of trying to think about the past and trying to understand what human beings have been up to. Yeah.
Right on, guys. just to wrap up, you know, here, so you know what's on the horizon for the Lesser Bonapartes?
Future's
so bright we gotta wear shades.
Yeah,
I have no idea. I really have no idea, because we're making this shit up as we go along. We never had a 5-year plan. We started the show out as a joke. I mean, when we did that, I remember when we did that very first episode, Alcibiades, mm-hmm. Critical Douche, which we just, you know, it's called Critical Douche. That was us, you know, again, pointing the Greek fire at the boat, being like, Alcibiades, Critical Douche, you know. And then, no idea anybody would ever listen. I mean, I remember waking up that morning. It was a Sunday morning. We recorded it. I was hungover all to hell. I was just like, well, it's Saturday morning. Let's record this, you know, podcast and
right,
see what
right.
happens.
I asked Daniel to do this podcast. I guess I have to be there for it.
Yeah, you have to be there. We recorded it. And I remember that very first month, we got 400 total downloads. And mm-hmm. I remember, like, the first day, I was like, going like, okay, you know, there's 5, there's 10. And I remember the first day, we got, like, 50 downloads. I was like, wow, Daniel got 50 downloads today, you know? And we're like, oh, man.
It was, it felt huge. Like, it really
did. It felt
did.
Huge. It's like, wow, 50 yeah. people gave a shit. And it's not just, you know, Daniel's mom downloading it 50 times.
Which, and, by the way, thank you, Mom, for being a consistent and constant supporter. Yes,
she has been. And then, like, the numbers went up and up and up, and people started talking about us more and more. They started, like, they go to the History Podcast Facebook group and talk about mm-hmm. us like we weren't there. That's when we noticed. And then,
yeah, that was kind of a fluttery butterfly feeling that there was yeah. that a dude that neither of us had ever heard of started a thread about how we suck, and that was like, yeah. dude, we made it.
That was like great. That was fantastic, because I mean, I love negative feedback like that, because that's just proof that more than Daniel's mom is listening. Yeah. You know, people that don't give a shit about us as people are listening. So that's great. And then, you know, it went up and up and up, and we got more and more, you know, people talking about us. You know, you want to interview us, and whenever that happens, like, I'm always just like, we're just two assholes with a mic who get 2 downloads a day. And then, but then we're not that, though, and it's been 2 years, and it's been a lot of work, but then 2 years from now, I have no idea. It's going to keep going the way it's been going, and we'll see what happens. Maybe people will get sick of it, and it'll go down to 0, but I don't really care. This podcast doesn't pay my bills. I'll deliver it to my cat. I'll be talking about this anyway, you know?
All right. I think, honestly, I think one of the coolest developments lately has been the kind of, I guess, the expansion of Team Bonaparte. You know, like, we hired on Andrew to do editing and some, you know, producing and social media kind of management stuff. We've had Ana Laura Magis on a few times, like, you know, starting with that Aztec series, and she's also chipped in on the more Spain series. Mm-hmm. We've struck up a very close and fruitful podcast friendship with Christops Andresens from the Eastern Border podcast, and so it's been really cool, like, especially over the last few months, sort of, you know, this kernel that we had of me and Glenn yakking at each other so that we didn't have to annoy our significant others, as, you know, it had this kind of broad appeal, and it's also the kind of thing that other people want to be a part of, and kind of building, the team. That doesn't seem quite right.
I don't know. I mean,
squad.
Yeah, the squad. Our hashtag squad goals. Is what we're
hashtag squad goals. Yeah.
But I mean, you're still. I mean, you were just. I mean, it's mystifying to me, and also flattering that people are willing to spend an hour a week listening to me do the same thing I do when I'm yelling at Crusader Kings 2. You know,
right.
You know, and. And then, you know, I'll feel obliged as long as, you know, people want to hear that. I'm happy to yell at Crusader Kings 2 at you while you're jogging or, you know, cutting vegetables for dinner, if that's what you're into, you know.
Yeah. For me, it's doing dishes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was awesome. Oh, Glenn, Daniel, I really can't thank you enough for joining me today. This has just been fantastic.
Well, thanks, it's been cool talking with you. You're a stand-up dude.
Thanks, man.
A critical bro, one might even say.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That is like a dream come true.
He's been really friendly, and he's asking good questions.
I don't care what everybody's saying about American biography behind your back, Thomas. It's real. You know, you're a good guy, man.
Oh, no. We're only joking.
I'm ribbing you.
I appreciate that. That's how I know I've made it, guys. Thanks. Yep. Any plugs you guys want to do before you head out?
Oh, man. Listen to our show forever.
That was eloquent.
Listen to Aubrey Sitterson's Scald. I promise I'm not dating him. It's just an awesome show.
I'm always plugging that one. Yeah, our association with the Dark Myths Podcast Collective. There's a ton of cool shows out there. But yeah, like Glenn was saying, Aubrey Sitterson's Scald is great, and we've become big pals with Kristaps over at Eastern Border. And because Glenn is always too shy to mention it, I'm going to. Glenn actually does another podcast with a friend of the show, or rather, Glenn's actual friend and a friend of our show, Sean. If you are one of those people out there who likes our Record Store Guy stuff when we get talking about bands and shit, check out Counterblast with Glenn and Sean. It's awesome. It's 2 to 3 hours of just solid ass Record Store Guy talk. It's absolutely terrific. I don't know if it's ever been mentioned on an LB branded. Anything.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, yeah.
But you guys are missing out if you're not listening to Counterblast. It's terrific.
Oh, I appreciate that. Okay.
Well, guys, great. Thanks again. Have a great day.
Hey, man, you too. Thanks.
All right, guys. That was my conversation with the Lesser Bonapartes. By now, I'm sure most of you have heard that Daniel Doughty is leaving the Lesser Bonapartes. When we recorded this interview, this fact was not known to me, but Glenn and Daniel did me the courtesy of letting me know in advance, so I wanted to take a moment to acknowledge the fact that podcasting is losing one of its brightest lights, and while we wish Daniel the very best upon all of his journeys, when he unplugs the microphone for the last time, it is a wholesale loss for the listeners who loved laughing along with him, as well as the other podcasters for whom which he was a shining example. I'm incredibly grateful that I had the opportunity to interview both of the Lesser Bonapartes, and it will surely rank as one of the highlights of my career as a podcaster. However, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that Glenn is going to continue, and while the Bonapartes are known for delivering the final word, I'm sure this is just the final word in a chapter and not the final word in the book. So, to wrap up then today, remember to go check out The Lesser Bonapartes. It'll be found on iTunes and at thelesserbonapartes.libsyn.com. But also remember to check out agorapodcastnetwork.com and see our stable of shows, including our podcaster of the month, Roy Field Brown, and his 10 American Presidents series. And I want to give a special shout out to Zach Twomley's When Diplomacy Fails, which is just doing a masterful multi-part series on the 1916 Easter Rising in Ireland. You can keep track of these by following Agora on Facebook or on Twitter at Agora Podcasts. All right, I'm Tom Daly, host of the American Biography Podcast, signing off for The Exchange. Thank you all so much for listening, and I hope to talk to you again soon. Daniel Doughty and Glenn Gibbons. Glenn Gibbs. we'll edit that out. That's what Andrew's going to do.
The decline and fall of the introduction of your show, Tom.
Okay.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods
for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.